Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's so deadly serious that its tagline is the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you will most definitely go friggin' nuts. And my very special guests, who have certainly not lost their sense of humour, are Dr. Rima Labo and also General Burton. I didn't get quite the last name of the general himself.
It's a stubble bind. It's very difficult. It's much easier to use your name.
Yeah. General Burt Stubblebine. How does one actually become a general?
With a great deal of care, a great deal of work, and a lot of luck.
Is a connection thing, like a good amount of networking, and you meet the right person at the right time, you get the right job and the right in the right division, the right company, and boom, you got a career path.
I think there's a lot to that. Obviously, the experience that you have as you have moved up in the ranks means an awful lot in terms of your selection, because the selection is all done by a board of generals. They, you collect a whole bunch of other senior generals, and they go through every file, you know, sort of paper by paper, and they are the ones, each one then decides who gets promoted, and then the whole group has to agree. In other words, they match General 1 with General 2 with General 3, and all of the, each of us put everybody in a sort of an order, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then they take all of the ones that were there, and, they then decide who actually gets promoted out of this sort of system. So it's not an easy task, and you may have one friend, but in this situation, you got to have all of them as friends in order to get promoted.
Aren't the generals who are already there all friends anyway, though? So if you've got one friend, you got all friends.
Well, the answer to that's yes, but each one of the selected persons on the board makes his own list.
I've never been to a general officer selection board. I am a far post-military wife, and with pleasure. But have you never heard of rivalry? Have you never heard of territoriality in organizations? I cannot imagine that these high-ranking guys didn't each have their own fiefdoms and their own political rivals, and they weren't going to give any ground to...
That's for certain. But every fiefdom borders with another, and it's usually upon those borders where they make peace.
That's true.
Yes.
And but the system is each one of the individual persons selected on the board makes his own list, and then you begin to match the list to see how many were number one and how many were number two and blah blah blah, and it's out of that. So it's a while it may have some influence. It's not an easy thing to influence the everybody who is on the board so that your guy gets moved forward and somebody else's guy does not. It's quite a unique process, as a matter of fact, Vinny.
It's sort of like if you have a sphere, how many ways can you come at a sphere in terms of a three-dimensional universe? You can come at it from pretty much any angle, 360 degrees, in various different directions. And it's sort of like if you are the sphere in the middle and you're being attacked from all directions, which part of you gives way and which part of you holds up and resists? And it's the person who holds up to scrutiny from as more directions than anyone else that winds up getting selected.
That's correct. You got it. And so the system may have some flaws in it, but it's in terms of many selection systems, it's a pretty, first of all, reliable, and second of all, pretty close to being moving the people who need to be moved forward, forward, and those that are on the edge just don't make it.
What is the objective? Because when the Department of Defense was renamed under the advisal of Edward Bernays, to become the Department of Defense, what was the actual goal intended with the use of the military? Because is it about retracting, holding position, or is it about taking territory?
Well,
a little bit of both, most likely.
That's a very, very interesting question, because if you had asked me that question when I was on active duty, I would have said primarily for protection of the U.S. and its assets. As I now look at things from a very different perspective, because I've been out since 1984, I retired in 84, and I have seen things happening by the United States which don't make any sense to me as a soldier, as an officer, as a career military person, because they appear to be more, I've got to protect my territory, but my territory is not the United States. My territory is all of those territories that have oil. So I am making sure that I will have a sufficient oil supply to keep all the billionaires billionaires and the millionaires millionaires and all the cars moving around smelling or putting out smog. That's very different. See that, Vinny, that's a very different aspect from the one that I lived with or was when I was on active duty.
That's from the outside looking in.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. Like, you retired the same year that I was born, and I'm going to be turning. and I just realized, you know, it's like 30 years ago, right? I'm 29 now, and I'm gonna turn 30 at the end of this year on the 29th of December. And I was just thinking about it last night that I was born near the end of 1984, and I'm thinking about the symbology there, you know.
Yeah, well, I was retired in July of 1984, so I've been out. I've been busy, but I've been out of the military since that 30 years, isn't it?
Well,
this July will be 30.
Can you talk about as well the very focus of the discussion on here? Because from a military perspective, if we're talking about seizing strategic resources, you're going to be thinking about complex game theory, the amount of strategy that's involved with conquering territory and holding it in order to extract resources from it. And one of the general methodologies, pardon the pun, is to use chemtrail geoengineering, or as you call it, neo-geoengineering. Could you explain a little bit about that?
Well, let me go back to your earlier statement of protecting our assets. I really did believe at one point that all of our military forces that were either in actual combat or were there to prevent combat were for the protection of the United States. This is hard to say, Vinny, but it comes right from my heart. I really believed in that story. Then I retired, and I began to watch what was happening. I lived through the trade towers and attack on the trade towers. And I really believe that that was an outside enemy that did that. Then one day I was, I'd gotten a flu and I was in bed. I was not well. And I was bored stiff, frankly, because I couldn't get up and out. And I began to read and look around.
May I add something?
Yes.
Okay. By this time, Bert and I were married, and I had been telling Bert things about the topic that we're talking on right now that he was not paying any attention to. He didn't want to believe me. He said, come on already, not my country, not my army, not my establishment. And I said, look at the documentary evidence. Look at the documentary evidence. And he wouldn't. He couldn't because...
Incidentally, she's absolutely right. I refused. My mind was so set on what I believed that I would not listen,
Vinny.
That he
was blind, deaf, and dumb because he was indoctrinated. His dad was a man of great honor, a career military guy, also a West Point graduate. And so he lived in this delusion that was so carefully engineered by the system. And he was completely impervious to fact. It was very strange in a guy who is so open-minded and so so available to new information. This was unavailable. And he had gotten the flu, which we don't get anymore now because of nanosilver, but I didn't have it then. And he was in bed, and he was too sick to want to live and too well to want to die. He was in that intermediate.
Hold on one second. It seemed like there was a little thing of background there, like somebody taking their blood pressure testing or something like that.
No, I'm not taking mine. No.
Okay. Well, keep talking then.
That's the good people from NSA.
Yeah, I was going to say somebody else is listening.
Yes, and maybe their blood pressure is going up.
Well, I hope so. You know, it'll add to the statistics of my listening audience. You know, thank you very much, NSA operatives. I know you're just doing your job.
We used to complain that the government didn't listen, and now they're listening. So, anyway,
what are we complaining about?
Exactly. What's wrong with us? Anyway,
you finally got your wish.
Yes, we wanted the government to listen to everything we said.
I think actually the surveillance agency should replace all political parties because they're the only ones that can be proven to actually listen to the people.
They have.
And are all of the time now. It was a time when it was sporadic. Now it's every time. Everybody in all of the, 24/7. So anyway,
Bert was too ill to get out of bed, and he was also too well to sleep all the time. So I gave him a book that he would ordinarily not read, and that was a book by Terry White, who was a guy who had been a CIA operative, ran drugs in Southeast Asia with
Air America,
Flying Tiger, and he had been hung out to dry by the CIA. He was abandoned, and he served 15 years in jail. Got out of jail, and he said, I don't have anything to protect, and I don't have any friends that I want to protect. Screw it, I'm going to tell the truth. And he wrote a book about the things that we're talking about now. And Bert will tell you the one thing in that book that convinced him that he had better start listening to what he was hearing, because he and Terry White were the only two people on the planet who knew the truth of this particular situation, the censor.
Well, this was during the period that I was in Vietnam, and I was the intelligence officer for the 25th Infantry Division. And the VC owned the night. When I first got to the division, everybody hunkered down at night. We put up the barbed wire. We went into foxholes. You didn't move. We operated in more than brigade-sized units. You never went out with a sort of a single squad or anything. Just the VC owned the night, period. And there were two trails that came into our area from where the VC were normally located. And I did the unit that I had, the 25th Infantry Division, did not have enough manpower to cover both trails at the same time. In other words, we were that short of manpower in the division, or in the folks that we had. And so how do you then tell the general officer, who's in the commanding officer of the division, where to put the troops? Well, what I did was I had a special censor. I only had one of them, and I put this
censor. Well, I think there's this piece missing here. There were only two of them in the world.
Yeah.
These were highly experimental.
They were all experimental. They were brand new, and I had one of them.
One of Bert's guys stole it for him.
Shouldn't have. I hope you didn't hear that. What she said was that one of my individuals who knew and understood the situation actually stole one of these sensors. Well, I should have turned it back in. I didn't. What I did was I put it on one of the trails. If the sensor went off, we knew the VC were on that trail. If it did not go off, we knew that they were on the other trail. So that way, I could tell the boss where to put the troops when they were needed in order to keep the VC, who controlled the night, totally controlled the night, keep them from overrunning us. Just that simple. And, oh, by the way, it worked, because we could move our forces to meet the enemy where the enemy was, and he didn't understand how we knew where he was.
And this thing had a code name that no one knew. Super secret.
That's correct. And one day when I was reading this book, here was this code word that no one else knew. And I said, holy smokes. The things
and
that I've been...
What he said in the book was that one of them disappeared one day and no one ever found it.
Yeah. And what happened was that I had a conversion, because instead of not listening to what this guy was saying in the book, I said, if that's true, then everything else this guy is saying is true. And so I had a totally complete turnaround in terms of my listening to what was being said in the book and to getting my eyes open and not being in the hole that I had been in, where I wasn't listening or seeing or understanding what was really going on. It was a great revelation for me as an individual, and it certainly was a boost in terms of my ability to do my duty, do my job. And, you know, I think I did a pretty good job while I was in Vietnam in combat. And I'm sure that that was part of the reason that I was promoted to a general officer, frankly.
But your conversion, lying in bed when you had the flu and realized that everything, all the factual information that I'd been giving you was to be considered very seriously, that was life-changing.
It was absolutely life-changing.
Did you go through that that really traumatic kind of depression stage that we all go through?
Oh yeah.
I used to scream at people and, like, you know, just be really, really upset about stuff.
My answer to that would have been, well, not so much. Rima's answer was, oh yes, he did. So.
Oh no, he did.
Bert's never screamed at anyone, but Bert went through what sometimes is called the dark night of the soul, because literally everything he believed
went out the window.
A sham.
Went out the window, right.
Yeah, it's like somebody, you just went through like 10 years of high school or something like that, and you get your high school diploma, and then they say, by the way, it doesn't matter anymore, and nothing we taught you was real. You know, just laugh in your face. You're like, you bastard! I invested everything in my entire life for you people. What are you doing?
Oh, you're absolutely correct. But there was another very interesting piece of all of this puzzle that came in, I'm not exactly sure of it was the time of 9/11. It was the time frame. But when 9/11 happened, Rima and I were in Hawaii attending a conference, and I don't know, 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning, one morning I got a call from one of my officers who had served under me. And I said, what in the hell are you calling at this time in the morning? And she said, the United States is at war. I said, come on, C, what have you been drinking? She said, the United States is at war. She said, turn on the television. I said, C, come on already. She said, turn on the television, sir, please. And I finally went over and I turned on the television, and sure enough, there was 9/11, one of the towers coming down. I said, well, that's a fictitious moment. Somebody's playing games. I switched channels, and there were the towers coming down. I switched channels, and there were the towers coming down. And I thought, oh boy. And I turned to Rima, and I said, you watch. I don't know how this got missed, but somebody missed the information, the intelligence on this, because there's no way that could have happened without somebody not doing their duty. Well, as you now know and you look back at, and I think everybody agrees now, the 9/11 towers were an inside job, and which is why all of the intelligence systems were turned off to allow it to happen. And another interesting aspect of that was that I was looking at some photographs of the Pentagon, which theoretically had been hit by a 757 airplane. And I looked at the structure of the Pentagon where the hole was, because this was a photograph, which incidentally you cannot find anywhere on the internet anymore. I looked at the hole, and I started to turn away, and I looked back at it. I said, something's wrong with that picture. I don't know what it is, but something is not right. And the more I looked, the more I realized that it was not, that the hole in the side of the Pentagon did not match the official story.
Had you seen those kind of holes before?
Well, let me tell you why I said that. First of all, the plane evaporated. Okay, now tell me how that happened.
It's such a bummer when they do that.
This crashed airplane evaporated, so there was no sign of it. And the only thing that was left, Vinny, the only thing that was in that hole was an engine. One engine.
A rotor.
And, oh, by the way, it was not an airplane engine. It was a rotor. Well, now, I've got a rotor in the hole. I don't have an airplane in the hole. The motor that is there, the rotor that is there, doesn't match an engine on any airplane, particularly a 757. So, what's wrong with this picture? And oh, by the way, I've got to tell you that one of my fortes when I was on active duty was photo interpretation. I was in charge of the Army Strategic Photo Interpretation Units on four different occasions as I went up the ranks. So I know a little bit. No, Vinny, I know a lot about photo interpretation. as a matter of fact, my first assignment was in the National Photo Interpretation Center. I was in charge of the Army's photo interpreters. Okay? I know a little bit about photo interpretation. And I looked at that hole, I looked at the rotor, and I said, something's wrong with this picture. The next thing is, where are the wing marks? The hole made in the Pentagon, the nose of this so-called airplane, would have penetrated far enough into the hole that there should have been a wing mark on the walls of the Pentagon. There was none. Okay? So you begin to put all of this together, and suddenly you realize that the story that is being told, the official story, is baloney. It is not true. Because if it had been true, there would have been an airplane in the Pentagon, or there would have been damaged airplane, or something in the hole of that Pentagon that would have matched the true story. There was zero.
There might have been something in the 52 surveillance cameras that the FBI confiscated the tapes and classified under national security. There might have been something on those that we could have interpreted, but we just don't know, ladies and gentlemen. We just don't know because they won't release the info.
They had all been turned off except one. There was one camera that either got forgotten or missed or something, because you can look into this camera. You can't find this on the internet anymore either. But here comes a streak into the Pentagon, okay? And when you looked at it, at first you said, well, that could be an airplane. But under scrutiny, the answer was, uh-uh. No, it wasn't. And then somebody painted or photoshopped a silhouette of a 757 on it. However, when you photoshopped it, it was not a 757. It was a missile.
It
matched the rotor.
It was quite an interesting missile, and the photograph, when you the photographic analysts who had sent us this very interesting video removed the pixelations of magic marker that were used to disguise what this thing really was. And what they discovered was the identification number of the missile, which was a depleted uranium nose cone missile launched from an airport in Colorado.
How about that?
I heard from, what was his name, Dmitry Khalazov, is a former Russian intelligence officer, that it was like a stolen, what's it called, anti-aircraft carrier missile that you fire from a sub that went missing from the Kursk that sank just before 9/11. The diver, Russian divers and stuff like that, they found the wreck of the Kursk, and the only thing that was missing from the whole thing was an anti-aircraft carrier missile, which is designed to fly basically at the water level along sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he reckoned, did it. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break with retired General Bert Stubblebine and his fabulous mistress, Dr. Rima Labo from the Dr. Rima TruthReports.com. Back in a minute, ladies. I almost said that F word there, but it wasn't folks. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guests are retired General Bert Stubblebine and Dr. Rima Labo. And we've gone from a number of different things about Bert's wake-up and 9/11 and the alleged and quote-unquote conspiracy theory around that. And in my opinion, almost everything that we've taught the definition to is probably more closer to the opposite of what we think the definition is than the definition itself. So, therefore, conspiracy theorist, meaning crazy person who doesn't know what they're talking about and completely makes stuff off of their head, is intelligent person who looks at facts, evidence, and makes conclusions based upon sound reasoning. And a mainstream person who is a skeptic, denies everything that is conspiratorial, is thought to be reasonable, intelligent, educated, capable of making the correct decisions based upon sound reasoning processes. So naturally, they're completely brainwashed morons who don't know nothing about anything. And that's why the whole world is currently pretty much screwed. Because everybody thinks it's going swimmingly. Isn't that about right? Oh, there's nothing going on here wrong, you know. Just tap on a wall, it's nice and solid, and it, boom, it's frickin' paper. Goes down to nothing. That's the whole world, ladies and gentlemen. It's a big gosh dang illusion. All constructed in a frickin' studio, in a frickin' boardroom, and everybody's in on it. Whether or not they even know that they're in on it. Everybody contributes in some way to the construction of reality. I would like to, in fact, rather than construct reality, I'd rather just reveal it to you so that we can cut out the frickin' middleman. The man behind the curtain, that is. General Stubblebine, retired, yes. Of course, back again. We're talking about the extermination of the human race that is going on here with military precision, mind control techniques, the media, everything. Every single form of science, religion, etc., in my opinion, has been weaponized.
Absolutely.
Well, it's being, I think it's in the, I don't know whether it has been or is being weaponized. I certainly would agree with is being. There are certainly pieces of it that have already happened, but I think they're more in process, frankly, Vinny.
So, could you explain to us the process then, as you believe it to be?
The process of
how things are being weaponized and how they're being used on the on the human race, just in general. You can use any specific kind of example you want as well.
Well, let me go back to the subject we were just talking about, the 9/11 thing. At the time, you know, I kind of believed the official story, but then the answer was, we got to go to war. We got to go to war. We have to go to war. We have to go to war. And my answer to that is, I mean, this was first choice, okay? We got to go to war. My answer is, that ought to be the last choice. War, always. If you've ever been in one, Vinny, you know that war is the last choice, not the first.
So what you're saying is that events and information were weaponized.
That's correct. And it was made to look like somebody else did it. So where do we go to war? Well, we went to war to get oil. So we suddenly ended up in the Iraq-Iran neighborhood. And we were there not to protect the people, not to protect the government. We were there to get the oil. So now, as we continue to look at what's going on, I believe that there is another agenda. And this may stop people cold, Vinny, and I don't know what it's going to do to your heart, but I think that there is a real effort being made to create a smaller population, in other words, depopulate the world. And we are called, we who don't need to populate this world, are called useless eaters. I don't know about you, Vinny, whether you're a useless eater, but I'm sure I am one, and I'm sure Rima is one, because we don't fit into their particular code exactly. So I'm sure that both of us would be called useless eaters and would have to be part of the depopulation. Well, how much depopulation? It looks like the number that has been settled on is 90% of depopulation. So 10% of somebody of the population is going to be allowed to live. The other 90 has got to go. So,
may I make a point?
Yes.
Thank you. I rarely ask. But it's because we've got company in the computer here. When we first started talking about this 10 years ago, because the Natural Solutions Foundation is 10 years old, just using the term genocide was enough to cause people to run screaming and question your sanity as they left your vicinity, because you couldn't say that. It was an unthinkable reality. How could anyone put forth the notion that the globalist community, the United Nations and the other big guys, our friends, were going to even consider such a thing. Now it has become not only a truism, but something and something that people can think about, but the other side has become so bold as to admit it without even seeming to be ashamed. They started officially declaring the necessity of global depopulation on 7 billion day in October 2011, when they said the 7 billionth baby on the face of the earth, the 7 billionth person, has been born today, and look at her, isn't she cute? And now, as the chairman, as the head of the Security Council, Ban Ki-moon, said, now we have to get serious about population control. And what that means is global programs like geoengineering, global programs like vaccination, which is a sterility and infertility delivery system, and worse.
And I might add, do not vaccinate yourself or your children.
Ever.
Period. Ever. Do not do it.
My mother was of the same opinion. She was a nurse, and she didn't vaccinate any of us.
Well,
good
don't.
For you. You
know, nurses and pediatricians and doctors are among the lowest percentage vaccinated people. They know. And by the way, you can go to tinyurl.com, Autism Inside Job, to access a 3.5-hour, very, very heavily researched webinar on the use, the intentional use of vaccines to create what Aldous Huxley called the Delta Workers. This is intentional. Autism is no accident and is very useful to the globalists who want technicians and servants. They don't want you and me.
So how about that?
Well, this is not news to me. I got over this kind of shock watching Alex Jones documentaries in the most powerful, horrific way possible.
Yes, and then you got angry, and then you got active.
I got angry, I got active, and stopped listening to Alex Jones because I found I was angry enough by myself.
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting because I, when I first heard about, you know, the 90%, I said, there's no way that you can depopulate a world by 90%. There's no way that can happen.
You have to work very, very hard.
Very hard.
Well, actually, I think it's not so much that you've got to be working so much as hard, is that you've got to be working at all angles. Okay?
Well,
imagine for a moment that from birth to death, however long that lifespan is, you will be 100% saturated in every environment that you're likely to go in and everything that you're likely to pass through your body, whether that be the digestive system or the lungs, completely flooded with toxins that will cause illness and death.
You got it. But let me give you another very interesting thought, okay? Why did Fukushima suddenly explode and send gyres and gushes of radioactive material continually? You know, Vinny, it's going on and on and on. There is no way to cap it. There is no way to stop it. It will go on. And the radiation, okay, now they're here. This is a geyser at a nuclear storage plant.
No. It's the nuclear facility. It's not just the storage plant.
Well,
it's
the facility.
Power plants and the storage facilities.
But here is this geyser going into the air, carrying radioactive material up into the sky, into the air. The air flows from west to east 9 months out of the year. 3 months out of the year, it goes the other way around. So the wind is now blowing all of this radioactivity, strontium and cesium and beryllium and whatever, is in the air. is coming toward the North America and has long since passed the west coast of the United States and also the east coast. And we know that because Dr. Rima and I have, with our own Geiger counter, been on the west coast, measured the levels, been on the east coast, measured the levels there. They're twice as high on the west coast as on the east coast, and all of them are off the chart. So here is an accident that now is putting radiation all the way around the world and into the lungs of all of the people, into the water, so they're drinking the water, into the soil, so the food that they're eating is being harvested from soil that is radioactive, and what is going to happen to the population?
Well, let me add something else there. We've been tracking this. It's not just our own Geiger counter, because, of course, we can't be everywhere. But we've been tracking this. We noted with interest, of course, that the United States and Canada shut down their tax.
Shut them off. Shut them off.
But what we see is that the radiation is not only as, well, first of all, TEPCO is completely committed to lies of every sort and magnitude. And the Japanese government, as I'm sure your listeners know, has made it a crime against the state to discuss any negative information whatsoever of any sort.
They can't even utter a word about it.
The doctors are not permitted to indicate when people get diabetes or cancer or heart disease or thyroid cancer.
It's all called stress.
It's all called stress. And by the way, the number of thyroid cancer cases in Fukushima district has gone up 50% in the last 60 days. So that's very interesting. Now, what that means for somebody who says that, if they're in Japan, is that they're subject to a conviction for crimes against the state by revealing state secrets, and they can go to jail for up to 10 years, which means nobody's allowed to know. The fact of the matter is that the Japanese government has been given free large amounts of substances with which to protect the people who have been exposed. And I know because one of my friends donated a huge amount of something that was used successfully at Chernobyl to help people from, protect people from various cancers. And that substance, which was legal at that time in Japan, it was already sold in Japan, that substance was put into a warehouse and is still there today, impounded, because using it would imply that there were problems with radiation, and we couldn't have that, could we? At the same time that the Japanese government has been given information by us and by others about practical ways to remediate the radiation levels using novel technology, patented technology, the Japanese government has stonewalled this information, refused to acknowledge that it has been given this information, and indeed has acted like it never heard of any problem, let alone any solution to the problem. At the same time, the Japanese government is pushing ahead with the 2020 Tokyo
Olympics
Games. And so we are asking people to take action and to write to the head of the International Olympic Committee and demand an international impartial investigation to see whether it's safe to bring athletes and coaches and spectators and workers who will construct the facilities to Tokyo. The answer, of course, is no, it's not safe. But we think that this is a way to pressure both the International Olympic Committee and the Japanese government into behaving at least moderately reasonably. Not very reasonably, but at least moderately reasonably. And so we would like people to go to tinyurl.com/Fukushima Hope. That's Fukushima Hope. That's one of our tiny URL action campaigns. And it is only through massive voices that public policy becomes ashamed to be seen and changes. And we've had success doing that in several places around the world, Vinny. So that's tinyurl.com/Fukushima Hope. Fukushima is helping to destroy the world, but as General Burt's new book, free for anyone who goes to the website, as General Burt's new book shows, the levels of radiation in the United States from U.S. nuclear reactors are higher than they are in Fukushima City.
How about that?
Yep. You're getting it from all fronts, aren't you, America?
Yep. You got it. That's exactly right.
You have the link that people can go directly to. I sent it to you before the program. But if people want to download the book, we're happy to have them do that. They can go. You want to give them the...
Dr. Rima, that's D-R-R-I-M-A, DrRimaTruthReports.com. And then you got to click on the...
tab that says blog,
and you can download the book.
It's a free book, and with it we give people a complimentary subscription to our email newsletter, which has tremendous amounts of information. I think you must rather like it because you keep inviting us back to be on your show.
Well, you know, you always present interesting information that scares the bejesus out of me. And, you know, there's a philosophy from my good friend Penny Bright. You can do one thing every day that scares you. And I probably do it only once a week, you know. I'm just trying to, you know. Yeah, I'm not as hard a woman as she is. The other element here is we're talking about the depopulation and... sort of like talking to, what's his name, Kevin Galilee the other day. He's like the Deepak Chopra of depopulation, or Depop Chopra, I call him. And he's been exposing the depopulation methodologies that have been laid down from the UN since the late 40s. I think it was about 1945 or so they kind of like sat down and started really talking about this, about flooding the entire food supply with estrogen mimickers and BPA containing plastics and things of this nature. Like in the 70s, pretty much you couldn't find stuff in glass bottles.
Now it's GMOs.
Well, only part of it, because they're still doing that, plus they've got the GMOs and the radiation.
The point that I wanted to make was not just the methodologies by which they're physically killing people off, but they're also creating a new religion so that people are happy about being killed off. It's called the New Age religion. Now, it is what you resist persists. That's their philosophy. And I had a realization. I don't know if you guys watch Star Trek at all, but there's a race in Star Trek called the Borg. And their philosophy is resistance is futile.
Whoa. That one's a new one. I hadn't heard that.
We don't have a TV. We don't even own a TV.
Well, let me explain, because through creative analogy, the Borg race on Star Trek really much mimics the New Age movement. Dig this. They have a collective mind. They live in giant floating cities that are in the shape of a cube. They absorb other races' biological material and matter and history into their data banks and assimilate it into the collective.
Wow. Okay.
It sounds about just like almost every New Age frickin' pain in the ass person I've ever had an argument with. Oh, you're being too negative. Resistance is futile.
You know, very clearly, I'm sure, who financed the New Age. There's a new excellent documentary on Gnostic Media by Jan Irwin.
Jan Irwin.
Talking about precisely this. and how very, very carefully it was created. The whole New Age philosophy was created by the CIA, by Edwin Bernays, Timothy Leary, Terence McKenna. These were all finally later admitted CIA agents, self-admitted. This is not something that someone else says must be true. This is what they admit. And the interviews are there in Jan's excellent, excellent new documentary. We're talking about an intentional social manipulation to achieve desired ends, which include passivity, lie down and die. William Styron wrote the book Lie Down in Darkness. Forget about the darkness, just lie down and die.
You know, you can't look at these kind of ideologies and can't think, oh, you know what? I don't think any of these people came up with this originally, you know? Oh, suddenly I believe in collectivism and solipsism that I imagine and create absolutely everything that's in front of me. Yeah, I'm that powerful. I'm God. Yeah, you came up with that idea all by yourself, didn't you, buddy? You weren't watching a whole bunch of silly little motivational videos by crazy gurus who have sex with like 9 girls a night or something like that, saying it makes them spiritually enlightened, you know? Pardon?
That was John Kennedy, the sleeping thing.
Okay. I didn't know if there was much actual sleeping involved, but...
How tired Marilyn Monroe looked?
Anyway,
moving right along.
She'd be walking bow-legged. And the... break is now coming up, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. You can check that out and also check out our sponsors and supporters and so on and so forth. We have books there, the crowdfunding revolution, or is it crowdsourcing revolution? I forget which. I'm terrible with this. And also The Range of Illusion, a fictional novel, first in the series by author B. Holmes. And check out the High Tea Cafe as well, who are a consistent regular donor to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, as well as the Gourmet Soap Kitchen in Wagga Wagga. And don't forget about Blue Shield as well. Get some wireless protection devices. Oh, you know, if you've got to protect yourself against the New World Order agenda, you've got to protect yourself in every single way. You've got to be like a cactus covered in spines from every single frickin' direction, because that's how many directions they're attacking you at right now. You can at least protect yourself against, like, EMF radiation by getting yourself a Blue Shield, and you can at least protect yourself against mind washing and brain control programming by listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Because it's good programming, all right? I'm trying to convince you, through subtle mind control techniques, that you're being brainwashed by scumbaggery. And hoping you'll do something about it. We'll be right back.